Welcome to the Veritas Forum, engaging university students and faculty in discussions about life's hardest questions and the relevance of Jesus Christ to all of life. For more information about the Veritas Forum, including additional recordings and a calendar of upcoming events, please visit our website at www.veritas.org. The following material is copyrighted and may not be duplicated, reproduced, or redistributed without prior written consent from the Veritas Forum. Join us as we explore true life.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, even if I am a Trojan. I hear you all play some pretty good football down here. There's been a good bit of talk back and forth between us and you all. I think it's about time that the Tigers and the Trojans lined up and got it on, don't you? Congratulations on your championship. I hope it speaks for your character. I want to talk to you tonight about truth. That may not be a very enticing subject. People feel uneasy about truth. It's said sometimes that the truth will make you free, but it's also true that the truth will make you flee. And people are uneasy about it. And yet, it's one of the things that's most important in life. We kind of want it, and we don't want it. So I want to start out just talking about what truth is. And one of the things I'm hoping for is this evening, when you leave here, you will know the answer to that question. You'll feel perfectly comfortable with it. Who's the guy that's most famous for asking the question, what is truth? Pilate. You all know Pilate? What's he most famous for? For crucifying an innocent man. Now, if you're going to do that, you probably don't want to know too much about truth. And when he asked Jesus that question, what is truth, he didn't stay around to get an answer, because he didn't want to have to deal with it. You say to your girlfriend or your boyfriend, is it true that you love me? And if they reply, what is truth? You know you're in trouble. Right? So we have this little dance that we do about truth. And we need to be clear about what it is and how important it is for us to live with it. Ironically, perhaps the people who today might ask that question with the same cynicism as Pilate might well be university professors. We're uneasy around the campus about truth. There are reasons for that. Maybe we'll get into part of them. Can't do everything tonight. Do as much as we can, and then let your questions lead on beyond that. But let's just understand, truth is very simple. Now, there are a lot of truths that aren't simple, but truth itself is very simple. And you see here on the screen, you have the words. Truth is accuracy of representation. That's all it is. Accuracy of representation. If someone tells you the broom is in the closet, and you go look in the closet and the broom is there, what do you know? They told you the truth, right? That's what you know. You're able to match their statement and thought against what it was about. Right? You say there's gas in the tank, and there's gas in the tank, then the statement was true. Right? Very, very simple. Please don't lose that. Because a world that is in flight from truth and uneasy about truth will try to convince you that truth is an enigma, that it's impossible to know. And if it's impossible to know, of course, that leaves you a lot of wiggle room with reference to it. Because if someone comes and tries to measure you against the truth, you can always say, what is truth? No one knows the truth. Or you can say things like, well, truth is relative. If you believe it, it's true. And if you don't believe it, it's not true. Now, you try that on your empty gas tank. Believing doesn't make beliefs true or false. Reality makes beliefs true or false. That's the way truth works. So let's just, a little bit formal here, but this is not a, there's no quiz after we're done, so don't worry about it. Just kind of try to think the thought. A statement, a belief, an idea is true, provided that what it is about is as that statement says it is. That's when statements are true. Truth is accuracy of representation. A statement or a belief or an idea is true if what it is about, and they're always about something, aren't they? The gas in your tank, whether or not your girlfriend loves you, and so on. They're always about something. They pick something out. A belief does, an idea does, a statement. And when you look at what it's about, if it is as the statement said, then you got truth. Right there it is. Truth. There's nothing more radical than truth. Nothing goes more to the root of life. Life is based upon assumptions about truth. The human problem is to find the truth. Find truth adequate to live by. Truth in scientific things. I flew here on an airplane from Boston. I was free to do that because people understood truths about metal and plastic and air and jet engines. And it sure beats coming in a covered wagon. See, that it's extremely important. Nothing more radical. And we want relevant truth. Truth that relates to things that are important. And when we come to the university, that is what we're looking for. I mean, you come here to have a lot of other things happen. Most important thing I got out of my college years was a wonderful wife. I made A in that department. A lot of others I didn't, but I did that one. So we get a lot of wonderful things out of our time at university. But what we're really here for is to know truth. Now, knowledge, you see, is related to truth. You can't know what is not true. Knowledge is established truth. It's truth that has a basis, that has a method. It isn't just luck. It's what we expect out of those who serve us, our dentists and our automobile mechanics and hopefully our government leaders and certainly our instructors and teachers. We expect not just truth. That might be lucky. We expect knowledge. Knowledge is established truth. There's a method back of it. There's evidence. There's support. Interestingly and importantly enough, that kind of support is something that can be shared. That's one of the reasons why knowledge is so important. If you're going to share something as truth, you better know what it is. And we require that because we need to base our lives on things that are known, not just things that are true. That's why when you think about knowledge, you see that it requires a basis in experience and in thought. You wouldn't take your car to a shop that had a sign that said, "We are lucky in making repairs." You want someone who knows how to make repairs. You want people who make repairs on the basis of knowledge, whether they're repairing your brain or your automobile. Knowledge is extremely important. So now, once again, I have a little formal statement here, but it's important for us to have these right. You know something if you're able to represent it. That is, think of it, talk about it, or treat it as it is. That's the truth. As it is. On an appropriate basis of thought and experience. That's the evidence. That's the basis. Okay, so you could be lucky and be true. You could have truth and be lucky. But that's not what we really need. We need truth on a basis that is certain and sure, that enables us to proceed. Really, the human problem in life is to find knowledge that's adequate to base life on. That's what you're looking for. And sometimes our courses don't seem to be very relevant to that, and certainly not very radical. But the life that we live in the university setting is deeply concerned about knowledge of how to live. And in fact, our structures, the way we set things up in the universities, teaches us about those things, often without intention. They do it simply by how we are able to live in the context of the university. Well, that's what makes truth so valuable, you see. You need to now think just a moment about that. Why is truth so valuable? Not just so we can sort of feel good about ourselves and compliment ourselves, you know. Well, I've got the truth. No, that's not why it's valuable. In fact, that's a kind of drawback. That we shouldn't be thinking about that as the main thing with truth. The main thing about truth is it enables you to deal with reality successfully. If you know truth and act upon it, then you will be able to deal with reality successfully. If you believe falsely that there's gas in your tank, you wind up in an embarrassing situation. If you believe falsely that your girlfriend loves you, when she doesn't, you're headed for trouble. That's the problem with falsity. Reality, you know, is what you run into when you're wrong. That's a good definition of reality, practical working definition, what you run into when you're wrong. You can state it more positively. It's what you can count on when you're right. And you want to be able to count on that. It's like the sighting mechanism of a gun. Truth is like that. If it's right, then you can hit what you're aiming at if you know how to use it. And truth is like that. If your life is informed by truth and you have knowledge that enables you to hold it steady and to rely upon it, then you'll be able to carry out your objectives in a good and successful manner. It's true that people generally prefer true beliefs to false ones. You go around asking people, have you enjoyed your false beliefs today? Well, they'll probably look at you kind of funny, because false beliefs aren't things that you actually enjoy. They might actually, if you say, have you enjoyed your true beliefs? They might be able to say, well, yes, I have enjoyed them. They're very satisfying to me. So now that's why there is a traditional devotion to truth. Are you okay with that? Truth is important because it enables us to deal successfully with reality. Falsity is important to avoid because it's going to hurt you. It's going to come back and bite you. And especially about things that really matter in life, such as we've been singing about here tonight and we're here to think about. So you have traditionally devotion to truth. That's why universities exist. The words that are more often written on university walls than any other are the words of Jesus: the truth will make you free. Now, actually, he didn't say that quite that way. He didn't say the truth would make you free. He said, if you continue in my word, which was truth, you live in it, abide in it, put it into practice. Not a nonstop Bible study, though that might help too. Right. But But it means you put it into practice. Meno is the Greek word there. You abide. If you abide in my word, then you're my students indeed. You're my apprentices. Jesus calls us to be his students, to practice what he says and to know and become able to do the things that he did because we've practiced as his students. That if you continue in my word, you're my disciples, you're my students, and you will know the truth. Now, in my elevator in my humanities building there at USC, they have just the truth will make you free. Apparently, you don't have to know it anymore. See, the person with money that wanted that sign in there, just put that in there. But actually, the truth won't make you free unless you know it. Right? You have to know it before it's any help. If these guys that built those airplanes that we fly around in, if they didn't know the truth, the truth was there before they knew it. Newton didn't invent the truth of gravity. He formulated it for the first time, possibly, but he didn't invent it. Truth is something we discover. You have to know it before it helps us out. Now, that word veritas that we're using here in the forum and that is used around the country is just, of course, a Latin word for truth. And Harvard used to have a shield that had, they went through various wordings, but that word veritas kind of hung on. After church disappeared and after Christ disappeared, they couldn't quite give up on veritas. And that's a good idea. I do some work with Accreditation Association out on the West Coast. WASC, we call it, just Western Association of Schools and Colleges. And in their handbook that they use to guide people who are doing accreditation work for universities, they come here. You have a different association, but they come here and they look you at LSU over, and they decide whether or not they're going to let them go on giving degrees. And our handbook says the very first thing, an institution of higher education is by definition dedicated to the search for truth and its dissemination. That's a pretty fair estimate of why there are universities. Truth and dissemination of truth, knowledge, research. If that work is done in a thorough way, then, of course, the truth that is dealt with would cover life. And traditionally, that is why the universities exist. Not just for research in particular areas, that's fine, but more important traditionally has been the teaching of truth about the questions of life generally. And that is why, go back to the Harvard Shield, they included with truth words like Christ and the church. Because in other times, that was thought to be the central mission. Now, why? Well, not just for the sake of the church and not just for the sake of Christ, but because those words stood for answers to the basic questions of life. That's changed somewhat. That's changed a great deal indeed. A part of the reason why there is skepticism about truth around universities and professional organizations and so on is because of the feeling that those big questions and the big answers can't actually be known. But you know, there's another reason back of it, because those big answers to the big questions kind of pin you down, and they call your life into question, and they say, what are you living for? And they say, there's a truth in answer to that question. What are you living for? What kind of a world are you in? Do you really have the good life? Are you really a good person? Those are the big questions. And traditionally, up until about 100 years ago, it was assumed that the universities answered those questions. Now then, that's no longer true. And the questions that are focused on are not necessarily relevant to all of life. You may have taken a course or two where you wondered, what in the world does this have to do with anything? You know? And the answer came back, well, it meets a requirement. Yeah? But you know, you didn't come to the university to meet requirements, did you? But if we aren't careful, that sort of thing slips into the place of first emphasis. When I teach, I try to teach a large freshman class every fall because I love to have those students sort of walk with me for the 4 years that they're there. And of course, sometimes you don't see one another for a while, but it helps form a kind of community for me, and I like to do that. And they are interested, of course, in the big questions. But they often go into other courses where it isn't clear what is the relevance. And we have formed a system where it is possible to avoid radical questions. Not take them up. Because they really do call us into question. And see, that's the bitterness of truth. If you bring yourself up against truth, you find that it does not adjust itself to our wishes, our beliefs, or our choices. Truth is utterly relentless. It doesn't say, oh, well, I see you believe this. Well, no, okay, we'll make adjustments for that. You think your gas tank is full, and so we'll just let reality be that way. The truth is not like that in any area. Mathematics, sociology, English literature, or for that matter, theology. Theology, you know, used to be taught on all of our campuses. I would venture it was taught on this campus, theology. Beliefs about God. See, whether or not there is a God and the relevance of God to our life, that's one of the most important questions that anyone could ask. But that has disappeared. And you no longer have theology. I think only at Notre Dame, of all the major universities, do they still teach theology. And obviously, there's a connection in that case. But bitterness of truth is something that makes people want to avoid it. It does not adjust to us. We have to adjust to it. There's a story told about a little girl in Sunday school who was asked, what is truth? And she said, what is a lie? Sorry, she said, what is a lie? And she said, it's an abomination to God and a very present help in time of trouble. And children, you know, children are little folks, and they like all these in the middle of all these giants, and they're walking around, and boy, do they ever need a lie now and then. That's why you don't have to teach them to lie. They figure it out on their own. See, they know what truth is. They understand its connection. They understand the bitterness of truth and the need to work around it. But now, on the other hand, we need to think about what knowledge of truth does for us. Knowledge is a very peculiar thing. It isn't like feeling. It isn't like sentiment. It isn't like tradition. It isn't like firm belief. Knowledge puts you in a different category because it lays hold of truth in a solid way. Knowledge confers some rights and responsibilities that none of these other things do. It confers the right to act. You ever hear someone say, what do you think you're doing? You probably have. The assumption of that question is, you better know what you're doing. Knowledge confers the right and the responsibility to act. If you are trained as a brain surgeon, there are lots of things that you have a right to do that other people don't. And I'm not, and if I started to operate on your brain, you would have some hesitation about my right to do that, wouldn't you? Not only does it give us the right to act, but the right and the responsibility to direct action. That's why we want people who lead or people who are in administrative positions to have knowledge. It also gives us the right and responsibility to formulate policy and to supervise how policy is implemented. And it gives us the right to teach. Aristotle says it is assumed that people who teach know something. What a novel idea that is. But see, that's the nature of knowledge. And because it has all that power, then it becomes politically potent. Knowledge is, in its effect, always political because it gives those rights and those responsibilities. Always political. And you might say political is always making claims about knowledge. What are Mr. Obama and Ms. Clinton and Mr. Arizona? What are they claiming? They're claiming to know what to do. Isn't that true? Why should you vote for one of them? Because they know what to do better than the others. McLean, Arizona. I knew that. Now, that's where trouble comes, because many people claim to know what they don't know in order to be influential. Or they claim you don't know what you do know in order to disallow your right to act and to direct action. So in social life, knowledge and claims to knowledge become extremely important in what we do. The power to control. On the other hand, one reason why that's so powerful is because we do know that, in the words of the prophet that I've quoted here at the last line, people perish from a lack of knowledge. That's an old prophet by the name of Hosea. It's in his book in the Old Testament, chapter 4, verse 6. People perish. My people perish for lack. Now, you can see why people perish for lack of knowledge. And you can see that happening around you in many levels, in many ways. People who don't know how to manage their money perish, at least in a manner of speaking, because of that. Hosea, of course, is talking about knowing God and God's ways, and that is a place where we're in great danger because, of course, God is perhaps the most important thing we need to have knowledge about. And now there's a lot of questions about that, and they have to be dealt with honestly, but on the assumption that there is a God, you would want to know more about him, I would think, than almost anything else that you could think of. And that's where Jesus comes in, because when we say that Jesus is the way, the truth, you were making a claim about Jesus representing God. Jesus is the truth about God. Accuracy of representation is what we're talking about. Jesus brings us to the realization of the true nature of God. But people reject knowledge. They reject knowledge because it restricts their freedom. Now, a person that was fully rational wouldn't do that, but we're not fully rational. We live in a society where we're trained to dodge and to avoid and to not deal with reality, to try to shape it to our own wants. Not suiting our feelings can lead us to reject all kinds of things. We can form our beliefs because of our emotions, and those beliefs may be opposed to knowledge. Knowledge tells us that we're not in charge, that we must submit to those who know. You know, sometimes we say things or we hear people say things, well, don't impose your values on me. And that's because values are no longer thought to be in the domain of knowledge. But even today, you will rarely hear anyone say, don't impose your knowledge on me. Knowledge, as we've mentioned, is something that comes with rights and responsibilities to act and to lead and so on. And so, for example, in your courses, you routinely have someone standing up front who is imposing their knowledge on you, and you probably don't say anything against that. Right? Knowledge restricts what we can do, and God has left a gap between reality and us. He has left a gap. This is an arrangement that he has put there to allow us to choose. You know that story about Adam and Eve in the garden and so on. You might think sometimes, well, why did God let them choose? He didn't have to let them choose. I mean, he could have had an angel stand there, and when Eve reached out to take that fruit, he could have just slapped her hand. That would have taken care of it, wouldn't it? A big enough angel. Then he didn't do that. You see, choice is very important. Now, we need to understand that in thinking about truth. Truth does not jump down our throats. Knowledge is something we have to seek. If we don't want to know things, we don't have to. You know, you don't even have to know things to pass a test, do you? Right? I usually attend my own tests and take up the papers because I like to look people in the eye. And sometimes when they turn the test in, I'll just ask them humorously, did you believe what you wrote? Do you believe what you write on tests? You see, what we have learned is you don't have to believe it, much less know it. You just have to know the right answer. Don't you find that troubling? A part of that is because we know we cannot require knowledge. Knowledge is something that the individual has to open their heart to and seek. We can require people to know the right answer, even if it's the wrong answer. But knowledge is something you have to seek. You have to want truth. You have to have reconciled yourself to truth, because character is the real issue in life. Now that's something to think about. See, character comes from choice. Our human challenge is to master desire on behalf of what is good and what is right. You may remember that story of Cain and Abel. And you remember Cain and Abel were trying to get along with God by offering things, and there was something wrong in Cain's heart. It wasn't because he brought vegetables and fruit to offer God. There was something wrong in his heart. And God didn't accept his gift, and that made Cain mad. And the scripture says his face or his countenance fell. You know how children, when they get mad, they'll suck, put their lips out, their countenance falls. Yeah, I don't know, you may even see some people around here do that. It's not impossible for grown-ups to do that. And God talked with Cain. God saying, now, Cain, you know, if you're going to do well, then everything's fine. But if not, sin is crouching at your door, and its desire is for you, and you must master it. See, that's character. Character is the issue for human life. What kind of person am I becoming? Think carefully about that last statement on the screen. God's plan for each of us is that we should grow to the point where He can empower us to do what we want. What we want. The greatest test of character is this. Suppose you could do anything, whatever. What would you do? No repercussions, no consequences. You had the power to do anything you wanted to do. What would you do? See, that's what really challenges our desires. And we must understand that desire is one thing and good is another. We can desire things that are not good. Love is tied to what is good. Love seeks what is good for people. You may say you love chocolate cake, but you don't. You want to eat it. You might imagine someone who just loved chocolate cake. They just take care of it and preserve it, and, you know. But if you're a chocolate cake and you hear someone say, I love chocolate cake, you know you're in trouble. So that's the great challenge. And Jesus comes to help us with that. We're becoming the kind of person we will be forever. What kind of person do you want to get stuck with? What kind of person do you want to be forever? Now, that's a real challenge. That is a real challenge. Suppose you got to heaven and you didn't even like God. Would you want to be there? Probably not. It might turn out that the fires of heaven are hotter than that other place. Do we like God? Do we love what is good? Do we seek what is true? Do we want to know the truth? See, that's the great challenge, to live in the truth. Jesus said, everyone who is of the truth. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they've got it, but it does mean they want it. He said, everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And that's what provoked Pilate to say, what is truth? Pilate knew he wasn't of the truth. And he was doing his dead level best to dodge that arrow that was coming right at his belly. He didn't want to hear what was true because he knew he wasn't living in it. And he knew he was on the verge of doing something that stands out in history as the one of the most totally ignoble deeds that human beings have ever done. And unfortunately, much of our life today, including our life in the university, and include the university itself, is not devoted to truth. And actually ask that question in the same posture as Pilate did when he stood before Jesus. I like to talk, you know, people like to talk about Jesus before Pilate. I actually think it was the other way around. You know, Pilate was before Jesus, and that's where we're all standing. Here's a person who's devoted to truth, who's devoted to goodness, who's going to give his life, who influenced history as no other person has ever done because he gave himself to truth and knowledge and goodness and to the point of giving his life. See? And he's standing here, and Pilate is not the one in charge, dear friends. Pilate is the one who is in trouble. Well, what are the great questions that we need truth on? I want to go over those just quickly. The great questions for every human being, for every teacher, the Buddha, Confucius, Freud, whoever, has to answer these four questions. The first question is, what is reality? What is reality? Now I ask you, what is the answer to that question that is given by Louisiana State University? What is the answer? There is one that is given. They don't teach it in class. There is not a department of reality at LSU. That's going to be true of all these questions. And I really want that to stand out in your mind tonight so you'll have a clearer perception about where you are. I don't want to... Listen, I love the universities. I love faculty. They're good people. By and large, they're doing the best they can. But you see, they're caught in a system that cannot deal with the issue, what is reality. But you have to deal with it because you got to live. And you're going to make assumptions about it. What is reality? And one of the best exercises you can go through is maybe this evening, take a few minutes and write out what you think is real. Now remember, real is what you got to deal with. Real is what you can count on. What do you think you can count on? What is reality for you? Another question. Who is well off? Now that's a big one too. Who is well off? Who's got it made? Who has the good life? I used to run an ad in the Los Angeles Times for Peugeots. You know Peugeots? It's a car, kind of car, French car. Be right at home down here in Louisiana. They used to run an ad that said, "Pursue happiness in a car that can catch it." Never mind that there are a lot of miserable people driving Peugeots. See, we think in very shallow ways. Sears advertises the good life at a good price. Want to bet? See, that's manipulative. But we have to think deeply about who is well off. There's an answer that comes to us from Jesus about reality. Reality is God and His kingdom. Reality is God, and whatever God is doing, that's the kingdom of God. And who is well off? Anyone who is living in the kingdom of God. You're living interactively with God, you're well off. It doesn't matter much what else has happened to you. It may matter a little bit, but it's not going to ruin your life. And that's why, as we heard here in this church this morning, blessed are the, you fill in the blanks. As long as they're in the kingdom of God, they're well off. Third question, who's a really good person? Now, you can make someone mad by questioning them about that quicker than questioning them about whether they're well off. Because that question goes right to the heart of our being. It affects our health. It affects the way we have moods that control our life and the way we approach others. Who's a really good person? Let me ask you, are you a really good person? And you might say to me, you don't know me well enough to ask that question. Okay, just think about it. I'm not getting personal, but I'd like you to get personal with you. Who's a really good person? Actually, you may have some good ideas along this because the teachings of Jesus have so permeated Western culture that if I were to say to you a person is really good if their life is permeated with love, they love their neighbors as they love themselves. They love their families. They love their fellowships. Love means, as I said, they are devoted to the good of others. Martin Luther King said, anyone can be great because anyone can serve others. You want to be great? Be a person of love. Learn how that works down to the level of your bodily interactions, your social relationships. Now, there is not a department at LSU or USC about really good persons. And the last question on the list, how do you get to be a good person? Oh, that's a big question, isn't it? Everyone I know of wants to be a good person. I've asked people over a large part of the earth, and I do it in my classes at USC, anyone here want to be a bad person? One girl who had heard some song by Madonna about only bad girls are good or something like that put up her hand, you know. And I found out she just wanted to be good, and being bad was a way of being good. Jesus answers these questions. You want to be a good person? Just follow him. Put his words into practice. Trust him. Learn how to live with him in the kingdom of God, and that will be taken care of. Now, very quickly, I just want to make the statement that in our academic context today, there are no intellectually responsible answers to these questions. None. By intellectually responsible, I just mean answers that have been honed and carefully explained and looked at in the larger context of life, so that you could actually know the answers to those questions. There's no knowledge on those. The university is not equipped to answer the great questions now or to deal with them honestly at all. And I mention here a man named Cronman because he's recently written a book called The End of Education. He was past dean of the law school at Yale, a very well-known figure in the legal world, but he's also greatly concerned about education. And what bothers him is that we no longer take those questions seriously. We save questions about the meaning of life and why are we here and what are we going to do. We save those for beer and pizza or something of that sort if we deal with them at all. The university's inherited the issues from the Christian past of the university, but has no resources to deal with them. Unfortunately, is more interested in human respectability than in truth. Truth is an embarrassment. Research is all defined by social pressure and connection. If you want to do research, you have to do it in a context that is professionally approved, or you'll have no support and you'll have no recognition. It's a tragic thing that has come about. Probably you have never heard the words, a knowledge university. But you've heard research university, and I'll bet you around here that people want to tell you that LSU is a research university. What is research? Research turns out to be a way of avoiding knowledge and truth and questions of the larger sort. You certainly would never be able to get a grant funded for looking into reality. Never. The meaning of life. Never. There are some twists you could put on it that might work. But generally speaking, truth in these matters is not wanted or sought. So the truth will make you free. It's still true. You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Keep backing up. You are my disciples indeed. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Okay, one more. If you abide in my words, do you put the teachings of Jesus to the test of life? He prayed that his disciples, his students, would be marked out by living in the truth. He makes it possible for us to do that. But how to live in the truth is the still unresolved problem of humankind in general. And now it's your turn. You're the ones. And the task of the people of Christ is to resist the secular definitions of knowledge that leave out truth about the questions. We need to force those questions, to push those questions, to say, no, until you have dealt with this question, these great questions, you have not the claim to be a radical representative of relevant truth. We need to present Jesus' answers to the great questions as knowledge in the sense explained, and to stand as teachers of truth to the nation. In all humility, with no dogmatism. You know, dogmatism more often happens with people who are uncertain. It's knowledge that relieves people of dogmatism and makes them open and willing to consider anything. You know, if you can find a better way to live than the way of Jesus Christ, he would be the first person to tell you to take it. He's on the side of truth, and he'll go wherever it goes. You can count on that. So you don't have to, as people who are standing for Christ's answers to the great questions, the last thing you'll see is dogmatism. You'll see love, you'll see humility, you'll see openness, you'll see freedom, you'll see joy, you see peace, because their hearts have come to rest in a knowledge that stands the test of life. Thank you very much.
For more information about the Veritas Forum, including additional recordings and a calendar of upcoming events, please visit our website at www.veritas.org.